An MOU with White Pass is back on the Skagway Assembly's agenda. And is cost standing in the way of breaking into the fishing industry? It's the Cageness Local News. I'm Abby Collins. Those stories and more are up next. At a meeting Thursday, the Skagway Assembly will review a draft Memorandum of Understanding with White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad. The Assembly approved a version of the document last month, sending it on to a negotiating committee. The group was also set to discuss the MOU at a special meeting Tuesday, but that meeting was canceled. It may be rescheduled after the holidays. Also on the agenda Thursday, an ordinance that would amend Title 12 in Municipal Code to address regulations for the Port of Skagway and the Port Enterprise Fund. The introduction and first reading of the ordinance was postponed at the December 7th meeting. Now the Port Commission has reviewed the draft and comments from the borough attorney, sending it back to the Assembly. The Assembly will also consider an ordinance authorizing the municipality to lease waterfront property to Petro Marine Services. Petro Marine requested a lease renewal in November. Owners of the Skagway Spirits Distillery sent a letter to the Assembly and Mayor Monica Carlson. Gary Lucas and Janilyn Hager are asking the municipality to submit comments to the State Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, supporting the continued sale of mixed drinks in tasting rooms. AMCO is considering draft regulations that could prohibit this practice. Last week, the Haines Assembly voted unanimously in favor of supporting the continued sale of mixed drinks. The meeting is Thursday at 7 p.m. in Assembly Chambers. You can listen live through a link on our website, khns.org. The increasing costs to get into Alaska's fisheries are making it difficult for new fishermen to break into the business, especially in rural coastal communities. That's according to a recent report from the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Sea Grant scientists. They worry that in an industry once defined by hard work, a fisherman's success now mainly depends on one thing: access to money. KHNS's Barrett Wilbert takes a closer look at the problem and how it could be reversed.
The year is 1971.
I'd like to be.
America is losing the Vietnam War, the Beatles break up, the personal computer won't exist for another decade, and Jim Moore moves to Southeast Alaska to go fishing. He got in just in time.
To get fishing required just a boat and a fishing license. Only cost me in the neighborhood of $15,000. And today would probably be in the neighborhood of $150,000.
A little history. 2 years after Jim put his first hooks in the water, Alaska passed the Limited Entry Act. It created a set number of commercial fishing permits. For the first time, your right to catch salmon depended on being a permit holder. The first generation of permit holders were awarded permits from the state based on their fishing record. Jim Moore got one. Others weren't so lucky.
When older fishermen reflect on those years and the ways in which the distribution of those limited entry permits divided families, eight brothers, one of them got a permit, the others didn't.
That's Courtney Carruthers, professor of fisheries at University of Alaska Fairbanks.
It started to really create long-lasting effects in terms of who had livelihood access, who ended up becoming successful, and who didn't.
After 4 years of research in rural fishing towns, her team just published a study on a big problem. Alaska's coastal communities are losing their rights to fish.
Anyone is able to purchase a limited entry permit, so it sort of benefits those people that have access to capital, and it tends to be that outside fishermen have more access to capital, are wealthier, and buy those permits up.
The first generation of permit holders didn't have to buy them, but the next generation did. So even as limited entry protected existing fishermen, conserved fish stocks, and made fishing safer, it inadvertently created a trend that Carruthers calls a paramount problem.
Globally, we're seeing these programs that have, you know, limited and commodified the rights of fish have had really big impacts for certain groups of people, young people, low-income fishermen, rural communities, indigenous communities.
Flash forward to 2004.
I walk a lonely road.
When a fisherman named Lindsay Johnson started deckhanding on a friend's seiner. A decade later, she'd worked across Southeast, Bristol Bay, Prince William Sound, and earned her captain's license. She was ready to buy her own operation.
It became clear that the fishing I knew how to do wasn't really in my budget. I could not afford the seine permit. Ultimately, I decided on trolling because I could afford it.
Market value for a Southeast seine permit today is around $230,000. In comparison, a troll permit costs a sixth of that, $35,000. But even to afford that, plus the FV's Sika, a wood troller, Johnson had to take out a loan. Actually, three.
I have a loan from a friend and the state for the boat and a loan from the state for the permit.
And that's before paying for gear, gas, groceries, and crew. That's a lot of risk, especially as a new fisherman with no way to know how her season will go.
It's more debt than I've ever been in my life. If they want to help young fishermen, I think it's just like those financial resources are huge.
Based on Carruthers' research, Johnson is a textbook example of what it takes to get into fishing today. With experience, social fishing connections, good credit, practice running a business, sympathetic contributors, and state-sponsored low-interest loans, she made it, at least to the starting line. But what about people who don't have one, or two, or all of those qualifications? Carruthers sees a generation of would-be fishermen stuck on shore.
Young people that we talk to, they're noting this, yes, it costs a lot to get in, but they've had a lack of exposure to fishing in their communities, a lack of experience, knowledge, family connections that are so crucial. They've actually been discouraged from pursuing fishing careers because it's seen as a risky, very expensive situation that may not pay out.
And as permits leave rural fishing communities, when they're sold or permit holders move away, they take the opportunity for young people to learn the trade with them.
You see that all through Southeast Alaska, this huge dispossession of fishing rights. Boat harbors, you know, that used to have 30 boats have a couple.
That creates a chain of tough consequences. Carruthers says in small communities where fishing is one of the few options to make money, the loss of a permit reverberates. Permits represent businesses that support families, buy groceries, and pay taxes. Losing those businesses hurts the economic health of the whole community, making it even less likely young fishermen can afford to buy in.
They have to have a rich uncle or some leg up in the system. And I think there's a lot of concern, you know, looking 20 years, 30 years from now, who is it that will be able to access our fisheries?
Because Alaska's fishing fleet is getting older. The average fisherman is a decade older than they would have been in 1975. Now, the typical permit holder is 50. Jim Moore turned 71 this year.
I've got my grandchildren now that are learning, and I'll be depending more on them to do the heavy lift. But I won't be retiring for at least another 5 years, maybe 30 years. Don't know.
Like Johnson, Moore is lucky. Many fishermen don't see anyone coming up to take their place.
Fishing used to be this career that took anybody. It was kind of this option where you didn't necessarily need an education. You didn't necessarily need wealth in your family. There's this opportunity for you to work hard and to be rewarded. And the landscape's totally shifted now.
Carruthers' research includes a suite of policy ideas gleaned from Canada, Norway, Iceland, and the Atlantic coast, places that have taken steps to resolve this same problem in their own fisheries. They range from setting up small, exclusively local fisheries, reserving fishing rights for young and indigenous people, apprenticeship programs, and more.
What's needed here is some policy shifts, not any changes in terms of what fishermen need to be doing. We really think it's a problem at the level of state and federal policy. There need to be some other options for entry.
But with Alaska's state budget in crisis, Carruthers worries there's a lack of political will to solve the problem, even with solutions on the table. She'd like to see the governor appoint a fisheries task force to work on it. In Haines, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
For Cage Nest News, I'm Abby Collins. Thanks for joining us tonight. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.